Every day I wake up with a single dream running through my head. To throw a little stone into a mighty stream and watch the ripples as they spread. If you want to make a ripple, if you want to make a wave, playing safe and thinking small doesn't move the ball at all. There's humanity to save. An excerpt from the song Ripple from the movie Spirited. Hi, I'm Ansi and welcome to my podcast For the Love of Group Fitness. I've been a multidisciplined group fitness instructor for over 30 years. I'm a trainer, and as well as having a yoga studio and a network marketing business, I help fit pros kickstart and build successful businesses. This podcast is about the crazy yet wonderfully addictive world of group fitness and what we as instructors do and don't do for the love of it. Hi, this is Ansi and welcome to this week's episode. It's my pleasure to introduce you this week to Rachel Lavin. Rachel is a multi-talented individual who has made significant contributions in various fields. She's a published author. I kind of feel like saying she's a proper author. She's a professional speaker, body love educator, certified health coach, and a certified personal trainer. And she currently resides in Greenville, South Carolina with her partner. Now, Rachel's journey in the fitness industry began 23 years ago when she became certified in group fitness through the American Council on Exercise. And her repertoire included a wide range of classes, including aqua, bootcamp, jazzercise, who remembers jazzercise, dance aerobics, stretch and chair classes. Then in 2007, she expanded her expertise by becoming an ACE certified personal trainer and pursued further certification as an ACE health coach in 2018. In 2020, Rachel accomplished another milestone by publishing her first book, The Donut Diaries. This book chronicles her personal struggles with weight and restrictive diets that persisted over 3 decades. And she very recently had a book signing in a Barnes & Noble bookstore in the States. Now, Rachel's turning point came when she reached the age of 40 and decided to reclaim her power, healing from years of negative thinking and self-sabotage. Engaged in a transformative process encompassing her mind, body, and soul, she found her calling in helping others overcome negative body image. Rachel's book serves as a powerful tool to share her message with women, reassuring them that they are not alone in their experiences. So with a mission to create a safe space for women to feel whole in their own bodies, she strives to empower individuals to embrace self-acceptance and cultivate a positive relationship with themselves. Enjoy the episode. Welcome, welcome, Rachel, to For the Love of Group Fitness podcast. Very lovely to have you here with me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's taken a few goes to get us here, but we're here now. And we got together through, was it Bob Asquari?
Jessica from Team Up.
Oh, Jessica from Team Up. Yes. So yeah, we managed to get together, had a conversation, and I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. And so we're here so we can get to know you a little bit better and, you know, share your story, really, which I think is really inspiring in what you've done and what you're planning to do. So for our listeners, tell us a bit about how you kind of ended up in the fitness industry and what you're doing today.
Okay. Well, I think as most of us women in the fitness industry, we all start with Group X, I think. So I started my career in fitness about 23 years ago, teaching classes. And then as I moved to New York City, I evolved into a personal trainer where I focused on that for about 15 years. And during that time, I also wanted to get a health coaching certification because I really am, as my career evolved, I really realized that there's so much more to your relationship with clients and your relationship with people that you work with, because there's so much as women that we have to deal with. We have to deal with our bodies. We have to deal how we think about our bodies. And I mean, it's just never ending, I'm sure, you know. So I got my health coach certification. And then as time went on, living happy, doing my thing in New York, of course, May of 2020 happened. And I had lots of time on my hands. And I decided at that point, why not invest in myself? Why not take a chance and write a book that I've kind of had in the back of my mind for quite some time? And so I did that. And with my book, even though it's about me and my story and how I've gone through all these diets and weight losses and weight gains, I really wrote it for women. And I wrote it because I wanted women to know that they weren't alone. So many times I hear all the time, I'm the only one who feels like that, or I'm the only one who feels this way about my body. And that's just not true. So why not bridge that gap and bring women together?
Wonderful, wonderful. I think, yeah, your book is called The Donut Diaries. Yes. I love the title. How did you come up with that title?
Well, that is a story in of itself. I love donuts, you know, and as an adult, you're always told that that is one of the foods that are like, no, no, you can never eat again. But they had fond childhood memories for me. And I actually really love a donut. So when I decided that I was going to stop restricting food in general, and I wasn't going to have a bad list and a good list anymore, donut was the first thing that I had. And it was such a fun and beautiful and freeing experience that I thought, what better title for my book than The Donut Diaries?
Wonderful, wonderful. So this all leads on into certainly the fitness industry as a whole, and, you know, certain aspects of group fitness as well, where, you know, I remember years ago, there was a massive thing in the UK press. It hit national press about, you know, fitness instructors having to look a certain way, that it wasn't healthy if the instructor was on the larger side. I couldn't believe it hit national news at the time, you know, but it did. And it brought up a lot of conversation about that. So it's kind of almost, you know, we're supposed to be a role model. So how can we be advocating exercise, a healthy lifestyle, and not look a certain way? What are your thoughts on that, and how perhaps how have things changed and shifted over the years?
Well, I remember what you're talking about. And I have myself been told many times in my career that I didn't have a body that was, I didn't look like a fitness person. I get that. I get that on a personal level, and I get that on so many levels. I will say the great news is that, yes, that is definitely shifting in our time we're in now. And many women who has always been capable and strong and wonderful instructors are at least being more accepted now. Now, is it something that's gone away completely, that judgment? Of course not. And that's going to take some time. But yes, it has shifted.
Mm. Do you think there's a difference between perceptions in group fitness as opposed to, say, personal training?
I haven't been solely in the group exercise space in such a long time that I don't feel 100% comfortable answering that. But okay, if you will allow me to just say, in fitness as a whole, I definitely see a shift in the mindset, the acceptance, and that there are more women trainers who look like the rest of us.
Yeah, I think with anything, there are pockets, though, aren't there, of different approaches. And therefore, because even in the yoga world, I remember going to San Francisco for a yoga conference, and it was one particular teacher from India. And through that teacher's lineage, we have Ashtanga yoga, Iyengar yoga, and the Vinyoga approach. And you could tell the participants from a mile off, oh, they do Ashtanga. They do. And it was just different, just the way they walk, you know, the clothes they wore were different, let alone body shape, you know. And so if that can happen in the yoga world, and, you know, it can also definitely happen in the fitness world with the different approaches. So how was that journey for you, you know, through writing your book? And, you know, did you have any revelations? Was it an easy journey?
It was an easy journey because I was very comfortable at that point with my story. And what I mean by that is it was not going to be all wins and frou-frou and I'm this and I did all this. It was like, I failed a ton of times and I have gained back the weight I've lost every single time. So I felt it was easy in that aspect where I knew I was able to tell the truth. So that felt great. The writing of the book part was something new for me and it was a wonderful experience. I definitely had moments where I was remembering a story and I would cry and I would, you know, but it was just all a lovely experience and I actually can't wait to do it again.
Wonderful. How did you get to that stage of self-acceptance?
It took a long time. I definitely want to be as honest and transparent with your listeners as I can. I had this beautiful kind of epiphany when I turned 40, and that for me charted this whole, that was 11 years ago. I'm now 51, almost 52, and I'm still working on it. You know, I still feel like this is something because I lived in that life, in that headspace for almost 40 years, that I can't expect it to just go away. Yes, I love myself. Yes, I accept my body. And yes, I take action to move the best I can for as long as I can. But I do have my days where those old memories and those old thoughts and feelings creep up. But I've had enough time under my belt to say, hey, this is just a moment. This is just a moment in your life or a moment in the day. And you are a beautiful, healthy, capable woman. And I'm able to go on. As opposed to 10, 11 years ago, those thoughts were constant. And it was almost like debilitating at times. So I have definitely come a long way, but I don't want to ever make it seem like, hey, I decided to love my body no matter what size it was. And there it is. It's not like that. You know, you have to really open up your heart and open up your mind to this change.
Did you kind of go through this journey yourself or did you seek help?
Both. It was a lot of things that I had to do on my own, meaning I couldn't depend on my mom or my parents or my friends or my partner. That kind of raw emotional stuff I had to deal with by myself. But I definitely had a therapist at that time who was a good therapist for me because he wasn't trying to rush the process for me. And he really was allowing me to get there on my own. With his, like being in that safe environment, but not doing the work for me. I hope that made sense.
I think sometimes, certainly the group fitness instructors that I'm aware of is that, you know, we've done our training and you're out there and it can feel quite lonely. And we, you know, and whether it's a female thing or we think we've got to be able to do everything for everybody and we put ourselves last. And then we're going through a lot of this emotional stuff and hormonal stuff. And then we think that we've got to go through it alone. And sometimes that's the biggest step, isn't it? To be able to reach out and ask for help.
Yes, you're very right about that. I think it's a very interesting place to be, like you asked me, doing some of the work by myself and doing some of the work with another person. But I think to your point, I'm referring to a professional. It wasn't, whatever. So I think a therapy is always valuable. I truly believe that. I've used it many times throughout my life. So I have always believed in the value of therapy. But I also believe that in the last few years that people are starting to understand the value of self-care, the value of resting, because, you know, that expression, you can't pour from an empty cup. And I do love that expression because it comes with a visual thought.
Yeah.
And that is so true. And us as fitness and wellness professionals, it's important for us to take that time for ourselves since we are always helping other people for sure.
Absolutely. I so agree with you. I just wanted to go back to the whole thing about acceptance of therapy. I just wonder, I don't think the British are as open. I don't think. And then for myself, coming from Malaysia, from the Far East, that's like even worse, you know. So I think, I don't know whether, you know, I think there's a cultural kind of acceptance that therapy is okay or getting therapy means I'm weak, you know. Mm. And I think it's okay to, you know, lean into, and we should, right? We don't think twice about seeing a physiotherapist, or, you know, when we've got something physically wrong with us, why wouldn't we look at counselor or other forms of therapists as well? Yeah, I think it's a cultural thing there that we need to kind of break down as well. Yeah.
Well, I hope so, because I think that the focus on mental health in the past few years has become much more open. And I am hearing about it in other countries and other cultures as well. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
And I think, you know, with the whole lockdown and, you know, the few years of lockdown, I think it's made everything so much more accessible, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Because then, you know, because you're able to sit and see, oh, wow, that's happening in a different country, a different culture. And, oh, why hadn't I thought about that before, you know? Where also it makes therapists more accessible because they can do stuff online as well, can't they? So I was talking to a friend recently, and I'm the other side of menopause and having gone through hormonal changes, and my friend's currently going through these changes. And it's this whole acceptance or struggle accepting the changes in body shape. Mm-hmm. It's tough, I think, for a lot of instructors, and, you know, who've probably gone through their 40s, etc., and being like, okay. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly with the hormonal shifts, they're like, I don't know this body anymore. Mm-hmm. What advice have you got for them?
Well, I think that's why the work that I'm doing with so many other women is so important at that stage, because the tendency is to get upset and angry and feel betrayed by your body. And I think this is the time where we need to be open to shifting our mindset even more. Maybe the type of workout that you've been doing for 20 years isn't going to work for you now. You need to change that. Or the type of diet that you have been on. And when I use the word diet, I mean your lifestyle, how you eat normally. I don't mean fad diet. Yeah. I think that may need to shift somehow. As long as you're open to the changes that you may or may not need to make for yourself, I think that's very valuable, especially during that time, because I'm where your friend is. We are now in the beginning stages of this. So I am noticing changes in my body too. And I think because I've been on this journey for a while now, I'm maybe a tad more accepting of it because I don't have a choice, right? I have no choice in this time in my life. So I might as well make it the most comfortable I can be and the best experience that I can make it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I know my body is shifted. Like, I mean, there's a whole different conversation, isn't it, about this time in someone's life where your hormones are wreaking havoc with your body. I had no idea that joints would ache. I was like, what's that about? I was kind of expecting a hot flash. I was expecting to maybe perhaps put on a little bit of weight with my body shape changing slightly, but I didn't expect my joints to ache. I was like, oh, no. You know? And it was just acceptance. And I don't know, for me, it's such a personal journey. I never ever believed or advocated that one size fits all throughout my entire career, let alone now. I think everyone needs to be treated as an individual and have to accept their individual journey, don't they? Really?
Yes. Yes. As long as we as fitness professionals really kind of lean into that, I love that expression that you used, I think that we can continue to help each other because we are all individuals.
Yeah. Tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, the whole process of writing and publishing a book. I think everyone's got stories to tell, right? And I think everyone's story is valid. So how was that process for you?
Mine is very special because that was the one thing that was holding me back for so long in writing a book, because I didn't feel confident that I was a writer. And when I made the decision that this was something I really wanted to do, and your listeners may or may not agree or believe, but I believe when you make a choice and you make a decision for yourself, the universe just provides you what you need. So I ended up having a conversation with a friend who told me a client of hers wrote a book, but in a very different way. It's called the You Speak It program. So this publisher has created a program where you get on phone calls, you tell your story, they transpose the conversation into a manuscript. You have to approve and blah, blah, blah. I mean, the entire process took about a year from beginning to actually being a live book. And I just was like, this is how I'm going to do it. I'm so excited. It worked very well for me, but it also, when I got the manuscript and I kind of looked it over and realized that it was a great start, it was a great foundation, but it wasn't quite what I wanted to bring into the world. So I spent another couple months using that foundation and really writing my book. So I do get to honestly say that I wrote my book, which I'm proud of, but they really helped me create something that I would be proud of.
Yeah. I've listened to some book coaches before, and I came across one who basically said, just speak it. You know, if actually typing and writing is stopping you from starting, you know, she said, actually just talk it. And then from there, you get something like a working document that you can then edit to delete and, like what you're saying, create your final product from it.
And I think if you realize that there are people, for professional people, whatever part of that journey that you're not so confident in, like for me, it was the editing process. You can hire someone to do that for you, you know? So don't, like you said, don't let the one thing that you are not so sure about stop you, because there are professionals out there that do just that.
What was it like receiving your actual book, hard copy book? How did that feel?
It felt so amazing. I just remember getting, I remember reading my final draft one more time, knowing that there's nothing else I could take away or add. It was just, this is it for now. And I remember going and hugging my boyfriend and just crying, being like, I did this. I can't believe I did this. Mm-hmm. And then when the actual live book came, it was mailed to me, a box of these beautiful books with this beautiful cover. And I just was so proud of myself. It was a wonderful feeling.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I think earlier on in our conversation, you alluded to like maybe another book, or did I dream that?
No, I said it out. I'm putting it out in the universe.
Yeah, cool. So what did you feel that wasn't covered in the first book? Or do you feel that is it a continuation, or is it on something completely different potentially?
It's not completely different. It's just a different, how do I say this without giving too much away at this point? In the past year and a half that my book has been out and the conversations I've had, I realized that there is an audience that I didn't target. So that's what I'd like to do.
Okay. Yeah. Because the thing of book, because you're a health coach, you're a professional speaker as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having a book, it's almost like a calling card, isn't it? It kind of exposes you to an audience who perhaps might not be ready to work with you. Do you see it that way?
I'm not sure maybe I'm not following your question, but I don't see it that way. I definitely know that there are women that I work with that are older, our age, younger women who might have struggled in lots of ways in their life. And then I also work with little girls. I'm definitely trying to get my message out there as early. And I'm still seeing women in their golden years, as we call them, who are still struggling with this stuff. And it's just like, let it go, be happy, enjoy the rest of your life. So I'm trying to get out there to all women.
Okay. Yeah, no, what I think, I've worked with several business coaches in the past, and the way they see it is that, you know, the bigger your reach, then the potential to then also end up working with people, either in a group setting or one-to-one, is greater because you've got a larger audience to draw from. Okay, so I've got a question for you here. Why do you think, as women, we have this perception of ourselves? Why do we seem to have this issue with our bodies and self-love and self-confidence? Where do you think it comes from?
Well, I know where it comes from, but it's so simple that it's hard for people to accept. We are literally, from the time we are able to listen and process information. We hear other women as close as our mothers, our sisters, our grandmothers, to other women out in the world talk about their body. It is something that we are taught at such a very early age that the package that we come in, the vessel we come in, is not good enough. There's always something to complain about. There's always something to pick on. And it becomes socially acceptable in female groups, almost as a bonding that we talk badly about our bodies. And if we just start teaching little girls and ourselves that that is really where the problem is how we speak about our own bodies and how we accept early on that our bodies are not good enough. I know it, like I said, I know it seems so simple, but it's so true.
There's obviously, aside from what can take place within the home setting, there's media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hypothetically, if a child is being brought up, right, you know, till they end up going to school in a very body positive kind of body acceptance environment at home, the minute they go to school and perhaps are exposed more and more to social media these days or just the media, mm-hmm. it's harder to control. Or do you think that the foundation is strong enough if they're able to kind of have that from birth, if you like, before they leave the home?
I hear what you're saying, and I believe that, yes, if our parents and the adults in our life create that strong foundation, even though you're still inundated with it when you're outside the home, being able to feel safe with that person, like if I were a little girl to come home and my mom, I said, "Mom, this is what the girls are talking about," or "This is what I saw on social media." As the parent, being able to continue that conversation and say, "Yep, this is out there, but this is who you are. This is how I see you. This is how I would love for you to see yourself. And let's do strengthening exercises." You know, I have a plethora of hot pink post-its that I give to my girls all the time, and they have to write something positive about themselves. It can be about your body, or it can be about something, just who you are. And you have to say it out loud every day. And I think that when you do stuff like that, you instill this belief system that even all that outside noise can't penetrate. So I really try to drive that home.
Mm. You've obviously worked with a lot of people over the years and different ages, etc. Have you got any thoughts on whether culture plays a part in this?
That is a beautiful question. And I have been able to, in my time, you know, recently, the past year of doing all these amazing podcasts and meeting very cool men and women, especially in other countries, It is still something that runs rampant through women. It doesn't matter what country, it doesn't matter. It's still something that they all have to deal with. Yeah, I don't think anyone's exempt, unfortunately.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it? Because for me personally, I think up until I entered the fitness industry, I don't think my perception of my body was as bad because I came from a sporting background. Mm-hmm. I had to compete in weight categories, you know, like boxing, et cetera, is martial arts. So I had to keep my weight within a certain category, but that was for sport. So it wasn't about aesthetics. It was about maximizing my opportunities. But it wasn't until I came into this country and my first boss actually said to me, "You're getting on stage." He was a teacher at a fitness convention and said, "Oh, you're getting on stage. You need to lose weight and get a tan." And I weighed 50 kilos at the time. You know, it was like 100 pounds. Like there was nothing to me as a husband. You know, that was the first time I actually started presenting. I was told that that was what I had to do. And then over the years of being, you know, in group fitness and at the forefront of a lot of things, body was how you looked mattered, mm-hmm. you know, and it didn't matter when I played sport. It mattered in the fitness industry.
Yes. I mean, I've been there too, but I completely am able to relate to you. of having that feeling and having someone tell me that exact thing. I'm sorry for our younger selves, and I hope that those women know better and they're doing better now.
But I agree with you. It's like, you know, because my dad passed away recently and I was back home with my mom, and my mom is 88 this year. And she's struggling with her body. Like, my mother's nothing to her. She's 5 foot. There is literally nothing to her. And she eats, like she really eats. But even it's just the acceptance of her skin, you know, like being, you know, when they get older, it's quite paper thin and age spots and stuff, you know. And I don't recall my mom ever talking about being unhappy with her body till now, the last couple of years. And it's the whole aging process, you know. She doesn't like that we've got osteoporosis in the family. So she's starting to slump a little bit. She's like, really unhappy. And I'm thinking, gosh, did she ever share any of that with me when I was younger? And I've just forgotten, you know, that I inherited some of that. Or is this just what I'm hearing now from her, you know?
Well, it could be all the above. I just think maybe having a conversation with her and, you know, because part of what I do is talking to women about longevity, you know, I mean, maybe ask your mom to look back on her life, and she's been healthy this whole time. She's been able to be self-sufficient this whole time. You know, remind her of the parts where she can be grateful. I think sometimes, you know, coming to terms with how close you are to the end of your life can be very scary, I'm sure. And that's how it's manifesting for her. I don't know. I think being, especially since you're coming from a place of helping people, you can be there for her and just say, Mom, you're beautiful and you've had a wonderful life. But I think it's important, even at that age, to hear them and hear what they're saying and what they're feeling, and not discount that maybe this is a sudden feeling for them.
Yeah, definitely. So what would you love to see happen with the fitness industry moving forward?
Well, first of all, we're going to do away with the BMI. That's number one. Number two, I want to do away with any type of fat calipers or fat body fat testing, because that is just a scare tactic. And that's something that I have never done in my professional career because it's just so horrible. But I would love to have women and men come to us as professionals with two things. One, that weight loss does not have to be the number one goal. And number two, that health and fitness and wellness should not be, I know I need to, I know I should, I know I have to. Hey, I want to work out. I want to feel good. I want to move through this life as healthily and functionally as I possibly can. Can you help me do that? I want that to be the shift in the conversation. So I'm working very hard on working with women in that space. Don't come to me with all this disdain already for yourself. How do I improve my health? How do I feel good? How do I get to this place where I don't have to think about it anymore? It's just something I do.
That just really made me think about how in the industry, there are a lot of trainers out there who still, you know, oh, we need to measure improvement. We need SMART goals. And so they're measuring either body fat, body circumference, body weight, etc. When really it's about listening to what the person wants and creating baseline measures based on that, you know, on functionality perhaps, rather than go just because I've been taught these are the tests I need to do at the start of someone's journey and then at the end, to perhaps think outside the box and come up with different ways of measuring progress.
Yes, please, let's do that. And you said something very, very important, that that's what we were taught. We were taught in school. We are taught through whatever certification we have that those are the measurements. And I cannot tell you, of course I did it too. Listen, I did the before and after pictures as a trainer. I mean, I love that expression. Once we know better, we do better. So I don't begrudge personal trainers, especially if you're new to the industry. Of course you are taught that. what is that acronym? It's like attainable, sustainable results, or I forgot what that acronym is that we learned in school. But anywho, I just think approach a new client as you would want someone to approach you. You want someone to hear you. You want to be heard. You want your goals, and you want to be able to tell that person what's important to you. So if you can start treating your new clients or your new prospective clients, or even your current clients that you've been with for 10 years, have open conversations. What do you want? And if you hear those three things that I said before, I should, I have to, I need to, figure out in your way, you don't have to do it my way, but figure out your way to change that conversation to, like you said, what do you want? How can I help you get to what you want?
Yes. I mean, that is something that I'm even conscious about when it comes to business, you know, because having worked with business coaches that are very monetary driven or whatever it is, and I'm thinking, but not everyone wants that. You know, right. We should be able to create, you know, I think that we want to always see that there is some sort of progress or some sort of transformation. But then I think it's down to us to decide what that transformation needs to be. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it just means like, so my knees don't ache going up and down the stairs, you know,
exactly.
Rather exactly. than how much, you know, body fat I've lost or something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
And the same for business. Like a lot of business coaches out there are very driven with just certain measures. And mm-hmm. I think, well, no, I think it needs to be different. The conversation needs to shift, like you say.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
our language needs to be better. For someone who loves this industry, so we're talking, the listeners are primarily group fitness instructors, mm-hmm. obviously some of them personal train as well and do mm-hmm. other things as well. What would your key message or tips be for them?
I would invite them to, like we just talked about, change the conversation. Stop trying to get people in the door or into your services with the promise of weight loss. That is going to go away real soon, and you're not going to have that to hang on to. Don't be afraid. I'm not saying please don't set healthy boundaries with clients, but don't be afraid to get to know them, get to know them as a person, because how are you going to help them if it's just surface stuff? And I also love to tell fitness and wellness professionals, you are one person. Please don't feel like you have to do everything. It's important for us to have an arsenal of people that we trust mm-hmm. recommending. If your client is hurt and they need chiropractor or they need a PT, or this is something completely out of your scope and they have allergies or eating disorders, you're not equipped to deal with that. So have people, even one person or two people in that category that you can refer your clients to, and give yourself a break. You are only one person. And it's going to ask for help.
I so agree with you on that. It's like, we have to know, right, at some point, this is where our remit ends. And even though, like, you might know stuff about another area, why not get someone who's a professional? I think we need to look at more collaborative work, because I think as a team, we all want people, we all want to make a difference in people's lives, right? And we all have different strengths that we can bring to the table. And if we can work together, we'll be able to help more people.
Yes.
And help them in a better way as well. And we really serve them, right? Rather yes. than like, oh, I know a little bit about this and know a little bit about this and I'll just do everything. Yeah.
And accept the fact that it's totally okay to say, I don't know. Mm. It's okay. Wouldn't you rather say that than give somebody false information and lead them down a wrong path? I would.
I don't know, but you see people do it though, Rachel. You're like, just no.
There's a trainer here at my apartment that does it every single day. So I get it.
Yeah.
I just literally have to bite my tongue a lot.
So this is a question that I've asked some of our previous speakers. Aside from this second book, et cetera, at mm-hmm. the time of this interview, what are you focusing on or working on for yourself right now on a personal level?
I am working on being a better listener. I really do believe that I am going to be a global sensation one day. And I want to make sure that I never lose sight that people hear, accept, process, and learn things differently. So that's what I really am working on, is to be a better listener.
Wonderful. It's a fantastic skill, I think, to be able to listen well, definitely. And what does the future hold for you, as far as you can see right now?
As far as I can see right now, I definitely see another book in my very near future. I also see me speaking more and more to as many women's groups as I can, and sharing my story, sharing my hopes and dreams that we all can be free of restrictive dieting and not loving our bodies just the way they are.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I mean, just for our listeners right now, if you're involved in any kind of groups with women, you know, they can reach out to you, right? If they just...
Oh, please do. I love talking about this stuff. And I love talking to other women fitness professionals too. So please, I'm sure you're going to ask me how they can get a hold of me. But yes, please reach out. I'm always happy to have a conversation with anyone.
Wonderful, wonderful. Because I can already think of several women networking groups that I've been a part of, and I know people are part of, that are on Zoom, and they're always looking for speakers. So I can
put
you in touch with those groups, definitely. You know, I just think, you know, for me, it's very much like the approach to yoga that I teach is very much about you got to do you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about you trying to fit you into a style of yoga. The yoga's got to work for you. And I think similarly with life as a whole and acceptance of ourselves, we've got to know who we are and accept who we are. And then we're all on a journey, I think.
We are.
So what's one final question to wrap up?
Okay.
Could you come up, what's one word that sums up group fitness for you, Rachel?
Oh, community.
Community.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, it is though, isn't it?
Yes.
I
love so much that my mom has been doing Jazzercise for over 30 years. And she has some of the best girlfriends that also, I mean, so it's a community. They're there for each other. They have fun together. They keep each other motivated. So I think group fitness is a beautiful community.
Definitely. My mom on Sunday, my brother took her to the park. They live in Bangkok. Uh-huh. And he took her to the park, and she's not been. She does Tai Chi in the park,
mm-hmm.
and she's not been. So it's obviously not to music, but it's still a group. And she's not been since pre-COVID.
Oh, no.
And so she rocked up with my brother, and her teacher was there, and some of her friends were there. And I was like, oh, it's so nice.
It is nice.
Because of the community, like you say, you know, the group setting.
Mm-hmm.
Group setting. Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time, Rachel. For listeners, all Rachel's contact details will be in the description for this episode. So they're all beneath and you can click through. Do reach out to her if you want a conversation, or if you think that, you know, she's a good fit for any women's groups for speaking as well. And yeah, and I can follow her.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that is this week's episode with Rachel. So here are my takeouts. You know, having a chat with Rachel really left me with some thoughts to ponder and some valuable takeaways that can reshape our approach to body image, client interaction, and overall wellness. So first and foremost, it's crucial to change the conversations we have with our children about their bodies. This is so important. Because by fostering positive and empowering dialogues, we can help them develop a healthy relationship with their bodies from an early age. Moreover, Rachel emphasizes the importance of shifting the focus to what the client truly wants. So instead of solely focusing on weight loss, we should strive to understand their individual goals and desires. Because this personalized approach will allow us to provide tailored guidance and support, and ultimately will lead to more meaningful and sustainable transformations. Rachel's episode also highlights the significance of getting to know the person behind the goals, right? They're not just another client, by taking the time to understand their unique circumstances, preferences, and challenges, we can serve them more effectively. Building a strong rapport and connection lays the foundation for a successful partnership in their wellness journey. One of the key insights shared by Rachel is the recognition that we don't have to do everything alone. And sometimes I feel as group fitness instructors, we feel like, you know, we're out there, you know, sort of no man's land, and we're kind of doing everything on our own. So build a team of professionals around you, you know, because when you have that, you can tap into their expertise and collaborate to provide comprehensive care and support to our clients. And this collaborative approach not only lightens the workload, but it also ensures that our clients receive the most well-rounded care possible. You know, build a team. You don't have to know it all. So in essence, Rachel's episode encourages us to approach wellness holistically, considering not only physical health, but also mental and emotional well-being. By changing the conversations that we have, focusing on individual goals, understanding our clients on a deeper level, and building a supportive team, we can create a more inclusive and empowering environment for all. So let's embrace these takeaways, continue to evolve and grow in our pursuit to fostering positive body image and overall wellness. Stay curious, stay excited, and have a great week.